Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yeah, but what if...
Here's John Williams.
What if the big thoughts a sham, a scam, a lie, a misrepresentation? Hi, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3. We sure appreciate you tuning us in on this sunny day. We're here weekdays 1 to 3 on the John Williams Show. On social media, WGN King John is me. Our news click at WGNradio.com, and it's on my show page, too. Just click through. You'll see it there every day. It's a question about something in the news. And yesterday we asked you about Oregon. The state will allow students to take mental health days the same way you would for a physical ailment. If you just need a break, you can legitimately take that in the schools there. You had two options on our news click. What a good idea. What a ridiculous idea. What a ridiculous idea, 55%. What a good idea, 45%, which is about right. I know this divides parents and students and families. The comments on our Facebook page include these. I gave each of our daughters a mental health day once a semester. It involved us doing something together, like visiting the grandparents for 2 hours or just doing something in the community that was helpful to others. This person completely misses the point of mental health day. It's not to go visit grandma. It's not to pick up trash or volunteer at a shelter. It's to do something that is not that. Anyway, that's how Jean handled the mental health day with her kids. Linda said, my kids are in their 50s. I would always give them a day off once in a while. I guess you would call that a mental health day. Yes, that's what it was. Betsy says, mental health is just as important as physical health for all of us. Call it a sick day if you want. Maya said, stop babying these kids and teach them to be responsible, well-prepared adults. I knew somebody would say that. Thank you, Maya.
I think what people fail to remember is that the brain is an organ, just like the heart or the lungs, and you get, respiratory infections. You get high blood pressure. You can also get mental illness, so that's a sickness, too.
You were kind of taking a mental health day yesterday, weren't you, Jen DeSalvo?
I did.
Yesterday I spoke at some length a couple of times about my wife's class reunion.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day I'm on the radio and there's a picture of one of the guys that we were with, Guy Warner, uh-huh, who lives in the Chicago area with his lovely wife and beautiful kids. And so there's a picture of Guy who's at the reunion with you golfing.
Yeah.
You call that work, lady?
He was part of my foursome in golf yesterday. We went out to Glen Ellen and it was a lot of fun. It was great to get to know one of your friends, John.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And you two took a swell picture. But it is interesting, isn't it? There's a certain professional class of people, and by that I mean salesmen and women,
mm-hmm,
who do go to golf outings. They, that's a work thing. But you're golfing and you're drinking. And if that's not a mental health day, I don't know what is. So the adult world gets mental health days.
Yeah.
Should our kids have them in school? Gail says no, because they're still not learning how to cope with their feelings. I think they should have coping classes and more counseling on campus available. Kathy said, I believe they already have them. They're called semester breaks. A couple of you have pointed out how there's Teachers Institute days, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the midterm break, blah, blah, blah. So the kids aren't really being asked to do a lot here. I get that. I will say this. I went to high school a long time ago. We used to chisel out our term papers. But I think there's more pressure on students these days than there used to be. And I was an achiever. I wasn't an A student, but I really tried my best because I wanted to be a good boy. I really wanted to do as well at everything I could as I could do. I wanted to do well on stuff I didn't even want to do. I signed up for stuff I didn't want to do because I thought maybe I could do it. I was an achiever.
Does that explain the woodworking class?
So here's what I think, that while we felt a lot of pressure back then, I think kids today are feeling it in spades. I think it's a lot. I mean, for instance, Steve, you took the ACT or PSAT test when you were a kid?
Yes.
And I'm sure, Lauren, you did. Kevin probably didn't. Just kidding. Just kidding. But it was no big deal. You know, they say, what are we doing Saturday? We got to take that test. And then you went and took the test.
Sharon, my wife likes to say, they woke up on Saturday. Oh, yeah, today's test day.
That was it. And yeah. If I had any idea that it was that important, I don't know. I don't know that I would have done differently, because we sure weren't taking classes to study for the SAT, and we weren't taking it as a practice the year before.
Wait, you didn't have a tutor?
It's just amazing. And so, you know, maybe your kids aren't motivated by all of that, but you're sure pressuring them to do well on that, because as Ferris Bueller said, you want to have a fruitful life. So there's more pressure on the kids, that's for sure. Maybe they need a mental day more than we do.
Well, I was firmly against mental health
days. I was too, though.
But I've changed. I have.
It's not an issue in your life now. Your kids are gone.
Who's to say I might wake up tomorrow and not go in? No, it's true.
Or you might take a mental health
but
day.
But I think if it's done, if it's really appropriate, you know, and it's done for the right reason, not just because you don't want to get out of bed. You know, the kid doesn't want to get out of bed.
Wait a minute. That's the essence of mental health day.
Well,
I mean, really, I don't think that you should show signs of psychosis. I think if you wake up and you're just...
No, I know, but...
I mean, so then where do you draw the line? What is the evidence that your kid really needs?
Well, you know, you'd wake up in school and you'd say, oh, Mom, I don't feel well today, when you really just didn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think you should say, oh, Mom, I need a mental health day, when you really just don't want to get out of bed.
Okay, so make the argument. I'm the mom or dad, you're the kid. Tell me how this plays out.
I'm not exactly sure. All I know is I'm less willing to say no, like I used to say all the time.
Come on, I want to be the mommy or daddy.
All right, so you've had a long week, a lot of testing, and...
You're third person. I want you to be the child and try and convince me that you need a mental health day.
I don't need to convince you of anything. I'll do whatever I want, Mom.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I'm a little more sympathetic to it now.
Gail says, you won't make it in the world if you can't handle school. It only gets more stressful. Thank you, Gail. Bruce said, nope, they are whiny, weak-minded as it is. It's time to cut the umbilical cord. They need to learn to think for themselves.
What does that mean?
Ron said, make them go all year. George said, this is ridiculous. And Barry said, I think we should make it harder on them, punish them, make them carry giant crosses on their back to school. I'm just kidding. I made up that last one. What else do we have here? It's all across the map. Well, that explains it. I mean, the NewsClick results were 45% said it's a good idea. 55% said it's a bad idea. This is in Oregon. They do allow them to take a mental health day. It's not a new concept, but now you don't have to fudge about it. You don't have to say, you know, Stevie had an upset stomach. We don't have a note from the doctor, but we could sure make one up if you need it. Wouldn't it be nice if you just said, you know what, my kid's not feeling it today. The thing is, maybe that's all. Maybe the mental health day is really just that. You don't need any justification. You don't need any quote-unquote mental health malady. You simply don't want to go to school today.
You ever have those like sort of authorized hooky days when you had something legitimate to do, say a family funeral or something?
Something more fun than
okay.
that.
Okay, but so where you it was all cool. You didn't have to go to school. Everyone else did, but you didn't.
Yeah.
It's that really a cool, liberating feeling, right? I loved that feeling. So that's kind of what maybe a mental health day
that
would
be. That is, your mom or dad would call the school and say, Steve's not coming today because
right.
of X. And it was like, yep, he's not sick, but we ain't coming because we're doing this.
You didn't have to stay in bed and eat a pot pie like you were sick. You can go out and do whatever you wanted.
Did you ever do something like that? Like, I don't know, dip your hand in cold water, hot water, put a hot water rag on your head and then say, Mom, I don't feel well, and she feels your forehead?
You mean mix mustard with warm water so you'd throw up?
That kind of thing.
No.
Did you ever do anything like that?
Only on opening day every year.
One day, this is my truth, which doesn't always coincide with the facts, but this is how I remember it. One day, I did pull some shenanigans. I think I literally did get a towel out or a washcloth, get it hot, put it on my forehead, called my mom in. And I didn't go to school that day. There's this very exciting moment around 7:20 when the bus would be leaving and you're not on it. 8:15, your mom's cleaning up breakfast dishes. 10 o'clock, it's a soap opera you don't want to watch. It was so disappointing. So then when you are home, and remember, this was before the internet, you're kind of home. You know, and your mom is not, this is my world. Mom didn't, I don't know what I would have asked her to do anyway, play checkers. I mean, what's mom going to do with me? So there I am, just kind of walking around the house, looking at my watch, realizing that all the kids are now having lunch, and they're probably laughing at lunch and having fun.
And all you can do is watch The Price is Right.
I know, that's it, and you're just doing that. And then, God forbid you do something productive with the time, like catch up on homework. It's like, heck, I'd go to school before I'd take a day off to do that. It just kind of boomeranged on me. The fun was at school, even though it was school. All right, let's do this. 312-9. Oh, gee, look at that. All the phone lines are ringing but one. Text or call, please. 312-981-7200. When I get to be king, should we allow mental health days? This is WGN. Chris Jones is a brilliant writer, I think, for the Chicago Tribune, the theater critic. And he takes on topics of the entertainment world sometimes, even when they're not theater. Notably, today in the Tribune, he has a really good piece about the various locations for a casino in Chicago, right? So should we put it on the south side or west side? Should we put it downtown? You can make arguments for and against each of them. I think what Chris said in the paper today was really interesting. He's going to join us at 2:30. We'll talk about where a casino should be in this fair city. And in about 20 minutes, we'll visit with a guy who has written a book about sharks. He's in town because we've got a lot of sharks here in Lake Michigan. And it's a fascinating book. You think you know sharks? You don't know sharks until you hear this conversation. We'll do that in about 25 minutes. By the way, when was the last time any of you guys were at a casino? We're going back to our calls now on mental health days. But when was the last time you were in a casino? Were you in one anytime recently, Steve?
I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago.
Did you play?
Yeah. I went to Vegas with a friend.
Ah.
But I don't know why.
We were at the one in East Peoria just for a drink the other night. East Peoria, they have the riverboat there. It's a nice complex, big hotel and all the jazz that goes with it. Brenda and I took a stroll through there just to get a cocktail. I was so depressed. It's just such a sad place. I don't know. I just didn't, you know, like the commercials, there's young, fit people who look like they've been to a gym recently. And they're all playing with nice clothes and they seem to be having a great time. That was not what I saw in East Peoria at the riverboat. I mean, literally, you go, oh, hey, people like the game. Let's let the state make some money on it. Everybody else is doing it. Yeah, we'll throw one up. Then you walk through there and you go, oh, really, people? We'll talk about that with Chris Jones at 2:40. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You need to do it in 3, 2, 1, woof, go.
Thank you, Jeannie. You get to school.
Wait, you're letting him stay home? I can't believe this. If I was bleeding out my eyes, you guys would make me go to school. This is so unfair.
Jeannie, please don't be upset with me. You have your health. Be thankful.
Oh, that's it. I want out of this family.
The greatest mental health day ever. Michael, you're on WGN Radio. Mike, what do you want to say?
Yes, I agree with what you said with regards to when we grew up. Taking that SAT was our responsibility. You went to school every day, learned as much as you could so you prepare yourself to take that test, to get into a college and go ahead and make a better life for yourself. The best thing we could do for our kids today is for these parents to get off their backs. These parents are doing it for themselves. Case in point, look at all these celebrities that bought into top name colleges. Didn't do it for the kids, they did it for themselves.
That's Michael. Mike, thanks for the call. I'm going from you to Julie. You're on WGN. Mental health days, should we have them in Illinois?
I think we should. I think these kids see this getting into college as a job. They're working at that job every single day. It's stressful. They want to move on to college, which is their next job. If they don't make it in high school, don't make it into college, it's like them losing their job. And I can't imagine having a job where you could get fired at any moment. And so, yeah, absolutely, they need mental health days.
Thanks for the call, Julie. Katrina, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? Hi. Whoops, I think I hung up on her. Steve, did I hear you breathing through your mouth over there?
Well, I just want to say something. It's easy to have to be separated from the situation and to say the kids are lazy or the parents are riding the kids or all of that stuff. But if you're not in it, I think it's a little unfair to judge. And I just want to bring up one other point.
Yeah.
It's not just about getting into school anymore. It's about getting tens of thousands of dollars off your tuition. You know, these test scores are involved in you getting scholarship money, grant money, all of that stuff. That had a big role in my kids' choices of where they went to school, you know, who was offering the best package. And a lot of it had to do with the score they got on their standardized tests.
Okay, so Mental Health Day?
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know how that. I mean,
I know. So I mean,
I'm not against the idea of a mental health thing.
No, but I mean, the mental. I guess your point here is, look how stressful it is.
I'm saying don't rip on the parents and kids for putting a lot of emphasis on the standardized test now, because there are tens of thousands of dollars riding on it. It's not just getting into, you know, ISU or Marquette or U of I anymore. It's also about earning a lot of money from them and them trying to lure you to the school.
A text has just poured in. My mom let me take mental health days back then, and we'd go shopping. I'm reading from some of you. Your parents unabashedly would say, oh, we're going to the Cubs game. How much fun? We'll go to a Cubs game. You might argue that in the grand scheme of things, you're going to go to school for 4 years in high school. You miss a day or two. Really, that's not that big a deal. But think of the lifelong value, the joy, the friendship, the camaraderie that you have with your parents if you and your mom went shopping, you and your dad went to the Cubs game. I mean, you tell that story forever. Isn't that a nice bonding thing? He said. This is Adam. You're on WGN. What's your thought about this, Adam? You're on the air. They do it in Oregon now. Only state to have a mental health day. You're on, Adam.
Hey, John. I definitely agree that we need mental health days. Some of my fondest memories you just brought up. My father would take me out of school, and we would go see a Cubs game. When I went to the orthodontist in Chicago, that was the easiest thing to do. But he also pushed so hard at school and didn't want me to take other days off. It's a generational curse, I think.
Wait a minute. What's a generational curse?
That the old-timers want us to work as hard as we can and get good grades and, you know, push our future. But I think the best days we could have in our youth was the camaraderie with our parents and the day off.
You don't have any kids now, do you?
I do. I just had a daughter. She's 3 months old.
So when she comes around the bend, you're going to let her take a mental health day, right?
I'm going to ask her to take a mental health day. I'm going to say, don't you want this day off? We can go see a Cubs game.
Good dad. Thanks, Adam. And finally, Ricky, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Yeah, hi, John. Yes, I'm an advocate for sure, especially in the workplace. I'm retired, and I think I maybe took 1 to 2 mental health days. But I lived through the bad winters of the 70s. I lived and worked in the suburbs, and I remember one day, just cabin fever, I got in the car, didn't go to work. I took a drive down to Lake Michigan and just looked at the beauty of all the ice and snow. I will say that I worked in education, so I had lots of days off to recover, but I think that workers, you know, with a handful of vacation days, definitely need mental health days.
I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for the call. Your texts include these. 630 said, kids these days are spoiled, lazy brats. I don't understand the hate, folks. Everybody, every morning, get up and take a not hate pill.
I just don't get it. I mean,
I get your point, but really, you don't know kids if you're saying that. If you are saying that kids these days are spoiled, lazy brats, 630, I know you don't mean it, but that's what you typed, because you know that's not true. John, studies have shown teens legitimately need more sleep. Early school start times produce sleep-deprived teenagers. Another 630-er said, these kids go to school 7-8 hours a day, swim practice, a learning center, tutor, piano practice, followed by martial arts class each day. I would take unlimited mental health days. 773 said, I'd be okay with mental health years. And 773 said, as a school employee, I'm allotted 3 personal days a year. No questions are asked. It's 129. There's a book out, and I haven't finished the book. I'm going to. It's about sharks. It's each chapter about the different kinds of sharks, great whites and tiger sharks and lemon sharks and lime sharks, whatever kind of sharks there are. Very interesting. What you do and don't know about these creatures after the news. The news is next.
I'm amazed sometimes.
I love traffic. I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
But I forget where I was the other day, and there was a table of 4, 5, 6 people, and some women particularly, I suppose guys too, laugh really loud.
Radios when they talk about. Yeah, they have to know that they're loud. It would be crazy to go so long without knowing.
I think they do. They must.
I don't think they do.
How do How do you go so long being such a loud laugher and not knowing?
I don't know, but I think some of those people are so oblivious to their human footprint in the world.
What a great way to put it. They are oblivious to their human footprint.
Hold on, I'm going to write that down.
Feel free to use that wherever you go. Oh, that person, they're oblivious to their human footprint. That's fancy talk for they don't have a clue.
And we'll be making it what we wanted to be. Scream and you shout, let it out, and we'll be making it what we wanted to be.
It's 1:39. This is WGN. John Williams here. By the way, I was also glad to hear Steve Bertrand mention in the news the topic we did talk about yesterday. That is how onerous, in a way, the vehicle sticker fines are in Chicago. And yes, you should have a sticker and you should play by the rules, but how you collect the money for people who are delinquent is stupid in Chicago. It's ridiculous.
We'll have more from the mayor coming up at 2.
Thank you. And I'm so glad we talked about that yesterday. It's a coincidence for us, but it sure was on my mind.
Coincidence? Maybe.
I'm glad the city's paying attention to that, too. You should not be making $250 million a year riding that ticket. If you're doing that, if you're making that much money, then you actually have a problem. You don't have a solution. You have a problem. You should not be pulling that much money out of people's pockets. There's a book called Emperors of the Deep. It's written by William McKeever. It's about sharks. Our guest is the founder of Safeguard the Seas. He's speaking at the Union League of Chicago at 5:30 tonight. They'll show a documentary film of his, and then he'll talk about his book and sign copies of what is a beautiful book, too, and makes you rethink sharks if you've thought about them much at all. William, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's delighted to be here.
So how did you get interested in sharks?
Yeah, so I've always loved the ocean, and as a kid, we went to the beach, and then I stumbled on a shark tournament in Montauk, and I saw scores of dead sharks on the marinas, and I just thought, this is such a waste, and I started to study sharks, and as I started to down this journey, I realized that they're completely misunderstood. There are these myths about sharks that are completely wrong. So I decided to write a book about it and make a film. And it's now my mission to make people rethink the shark.
Well, maybe we don't understand them, but who cares, really? There's a lot of sharks. They swim around in the ocean. I don't understand them. What's the consequence of all of that?
Yeah, that's a great question, John. There's a huge consequence because, you know, if you step back, apex predators are really crucial in any ecosystem. And as we know from Yellowstone, when they removed wolves, it had a catastrophic effect on the ecosystem. They brought the wolves back, and it brought Yellowstone back. The same theory applies to the marine ecosystem. Sharks are apex predators. You take them out of the ecosystem, it causes havoc throughout the system, whether it's a reef system or seagrass. And I detail in the book exactly how and where the sharks are crucial. We need sharks desperately.
Why? Where?
Well, as an example, seagrass. Seagrass is important because it's where the little fish grow up. It's an ecosystem for them. It's also a place where the carbon that we emit into the atmosphere gets absorbed into that seagrass. It gets buried deep inside the ocean. And so what happens is that when there aren't sharks, turtles and dugongs and sea cows will overgraze. They'll eat that seagrass. It's the sharks that can actually control that population, make sure that they limit how much seagrass, because if they stick around too much, a tiger shark is going to eat them. And so we preserve these seagrass beds. And seagrass grows all around the world, and we're losing those seagrass beds. And so that hurts the fishing industry.
What's the problem with sharks? That is, are we losing sharks? Are they dwindling?
Yes, we are losing sharks at a rate that is unsustainable. There are 100 million sharks that are killed every year.
You actually, in the book, said, and I when I read that, I thought, that's not right. The next sentence is, no, it's not a typo. It's 100 million a year.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to me because I didn't know we had 100 million sharks to begin with. I mean, there must be a lot of sharks out there.
Yeah, there are. And sharks are around the world, and they go from the beaches where we swim all the way out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and they are in every ecosystem.
Where are they going? What's happening to them?
Well, what's happening to them is that they are being caught up in the tuna fishing industry. So when we're going out and catching tuna, we're also catching sharks. Now, they could let the sharks go, But the people who are working these tuna ships are typically slaves. And the only way that they can make money is to fin the shark, usually alive, and sell those fins to make shark fin soup. That's how they make the few dollars that they do. So the consequence to sharks is that we lose 70 million sharks just for shark fin soup in Asia, primarily in China. And it's become a cultural effect because countries like Thailand and in Macau, you've got to have shark fin soup on the menu to be prestigious.
You write about and actually show pictures of people who work in the fishing industry. Slaves, is that the right word?
Slaves is the right word. A lot of these people, sadly, are tricked into working on these ships. They're told, for example, that there's a job for them waiting in construction, and they sign up for it. They leave countries that are very poor, like Cambodia and Burma, and then they get caught on a ship, and there's nothing they can do about it. Because once they're at sea, they're there sometimes for 2 or 3 years at a time.
Do you want us to eat less tuna then?
Well, I think that we as consumers should think very carefully about our seafood purchases. If you do decide to eat tuna, you want to pick tuna that's fished sustainably.
I'm not supposed to eat cows anymore, and I thought pork was a bad idea, and chickens don't seem to be having a good go of it. And so then you say, all right, we'll eat fish, but now you don't want me to eat tuna. I mean, really, a conscientious consumer, I'm not being flip here. It's getting more complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting more complicated. And I would quickly add, John, that I'm not saying don't eat fish. In fact, fish is great. I eat it all the time. We need it. I'm saying eat fish that is caught sustainably, that we can take out of the ocean without destroying the ecosystem.
What's your recommendation on that?
Well, I think when you catch what's called pole-caught fish, where one fisherman goes out with one pole, one line, catches one fish at a time.
Do they have that at my grocery store?
They do. There is some tuna that's pole-caught that does exactly that.
That's a small point, though, I suppose. I mean, the larger issue must be Asia, right? How are you going to combat that?
Well, I think how we combat that is that we put in place the regulations around the world that treat tuna and sharks and all these magnificent creatures in the ocean as really belonging to all mankind, and to put in rules that don't allow some countries to overexploit, and particularly that's what the Chinese are doing. They're overexploiting the world's oceans to our detriment.
And even enlightened cultures, too. I mean, was it Thailand or Taiwan that you point to, which seems to be a somewhat forward-thinking country at times on some issues, seems to be indifferent to this?
Yes, I think that there's a clear difference in those countries from our values, which is that the ocean is to be preserved and you put in legislation to protect these animals.
It's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, I could very easily see them telling us, don't tell us about our culture and how to eat and how to live and what to respect. We live near the ocean. It feeds our people. Pound sand, USA, with your high ideals, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, they can say that. However, I think that we have to look at the planet as something that we all share, and one country shouldn't be allowed to destroy it. As an example, China's fishing fleet travels around the world, and they have decimated some fishing grounds off of Africa, certainly on the high seas. Some of these sharks, as I described in the book, Emperors of the Deep, their populations are down 80%. Oceanic white-tip sharks, for example, are down 90%.
William McKeever's in our studio. Emperors of the Deep is a beautiful new hardback book with lovely pictures in there. It's utterly scannable. It takes you through the various subspecies of shark. Maybe the way to do your bidding would be best to sort of paint them in a whole new light. Let's not make them Jaws at the beach or something that's ridiculous like Sharknado, two cultural right milestones for Americans in the world of sharks. Shark Week is something that sort of celebrates their viciousness. Make your best case for my affection for sharks, because you really have that. You root for these animals in your book.
Yeah, I really do. I love sharks. I think they're magnificent, beautiful creatures, and we need to embrace them. They're here, and thank God they're here, because they saved the oceans. And I think that if there was one issue, is that these are not crazed man-eaters. When they typically come across a human being, they actually swim away. They're interested in eating fish. You know, they've been around for 450 million years. Their DNA is programmed so they eat fish. They need to eat seals. They need blubber.
450 million years.
They were here before the dinosaurs.
I was just going to say, so walk me through that timeline. Really, they are, they would have been at the time of dinosaurs.
Yeah, actually before the time. So sharks were swimming. They'd pop their head out of the water. They would see it. They were here before them. Dinosaurs appeared. The dinosaurs have been long gone. And there have been five major extinction events on the planet that they've all survived.
And you also described just how amazingly engineered they are. Talk about the two that you give the first names of, Mac, right, or Lucia, the two sharks that you name in the beginning of the book, the white sharks?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's a white shark called Mary Lee.
Mary Lee.
That has quite a Twitter following.
And Shaq.
And Shaq. No relation to the basketball player.
Right. Okay, so Mary Lee. Tell me about Mary Lee.
Yeah, what they did was they tagged Mary Lee, and they looked at to where she went in the ocean. And they found that Mary Lee would dive to 4,000 feet. To put that in perspective, a U.S. nuclear-powered submarine will implode at 1,700 feet. 4,000 feet down, it's the equivalent of putting a very large pig on every square inch of your body. These sharks...
That's the pressure.
That's the pressure. It's that intense. Submarines implode. And sharks are able to go down there routinely. Shaq, who is a male shark, would go down routinely to 4,000 feet and actually show off to the females how big and strong he was.
You think that's why they do it?
I think in some places they do. There's a place in the Pacific Ocean called the Great White Shark Cafe where the males and the females congregate. That water is the clearest water in the ocean. And the males have been recorded diving down to 1,500 feet, doing it 20 times at once to show off. Say, look what I can do,
check
sweetheart.
This out. The water's virtually freezing down there. The pressure's unfathomable. You also talk about, just speaking of the engineering of them, that they're able to virtually see in the dark, right? Because of the extra layer behind their retinas or something?
Yeah, that is, it's amazing that, you know, lions obviously are known for seeing in the dark. Sharks have the same construction of their eye. And in addition to that, they actually heat their eyes and their brain. So when they're traveling these great distances and these great depths, they have the warmth that gives them the ability to think, to react, to see. They are formidable predators.
Well, that's it, too. I mean, so sell the sizzle a little bit. This might not help your cause, but they really are, perhaps because they've survived so long, engineered to also win, right? I mean, talk about their jaws and how they track their prey and stuff like that.
Yeah, they have a virtual arsenal of equipment. The one shark that is an amazing hunter is the Mako. That's the fastest shark in the ocean. They go 45 miles an hour. And they have these pores in their noses that can sense electrical signals. And they've been able to detect in sharks that they can measure 1/15 of a billionth of a volt. It's that sensitive. And they use that to find their prey and to be able to finish them off.
Can they detect a drop of blood a mile away?
That is a bit of a myth, in that to get a drop of blood to them, typically the blood would disperse. So that's unusual. But if there was significant blood in the water and it managed to stay together and drift, they could detect that. But that's highly unusual.
You talked, but they do have amazing, I don't know if that's olfactory or sense of smell, but they... They're high achievers in that area, right?
Yes, exactly. 60% of the brain of a great white shark is devoted to smell. They live in a in a world of scent, and so they know when a seal has gone by, and they know where to start tracking it.
Because that's interesting, too. So say you pick up the smell. Where did that come from? You're suddenly in that, but how do you know which way to turn if you're a shark? But again, there's something about the design of those creatures that tells them which way to turn.
Yeah, and the way they do it is they have something called a lateral line that goes down the sides, and they can detect the different arrival times in the odor plume. And not to get too technical, that's in the book, but they will be able to track a seal for miles. And in one case in the book, I talked about how a Mako caught a seal that was about 1,000 pounds and was able to track it and finish it off.
The book is called Emperors of the Deep. It's by William McKeever. He's speaking at the Union League of Chicago tonight at 5:30, a documentary film, and then this. You know, we'll take a break, come back. I just have one last thing for you to comment on, and that is, who's the Smokey the Bear? Who's the flipper for sharks? You almost need a marketing campaign or something in order to maybe better make the case for the respect and preservation of these amazing creatures. Actually, let's just wrap this up, and then we'll take a commercial break afterwards. We'll talk about New Trier hockey for reasons that will warm and touch your heart. William McKeever's book is Emperors of the Deep. It's about sharks. The subtitle, The Ocean's Most Mysterious, Most Misunderstood, and Most Important Guardians. I think you've made that case very well, William. You're speaking at the Union League of Chicago tonight at 5:30. It's open to the public. Documentary, discussion, and the signing of the book there, I recommend that. But do you need a Smokey the Bear? Do you need a Flipper? Do you need Lassie to sort of help the public embrace your cause?
Yes, I think that people look at sharks now as scary animals, and I think if they can have a connection with sharks and begin to see how magnificent they are, that would help. And I think, as we saw with Mary Lee, here was a great white shark people were following. She was going up and down the East Coast. They were following her on Twitter.
She had a Twitter account.
She had a Twitter account. She had a Facebook account, and she would summer in up in the Hamptons.
Yes, sometimes on Hamptonites. How many people each year are killed by sharks?
Four. Four people on a planet of, where are we now? Six
seven
and a half,
billion.
7 billion now. The amazing thing is that in North Carolina, there were two people killed last year by rogue waves. A very sad event. But that's far more than are killed by sharks. There are people who are killed by ants that are far greater than killed by sharks. Almost any human activity is more deadly than swimming in the ocean.
Well put. Okay, read the book. Cheer them on. What's a website that people can either follow you or follow any of these animals, be involved in your cause?
Yeah, so if you go to www.safeguardtheseas, all one word, .org, and also williammckeever.com, I have a clip there for the film and the book, and people should, I think, start to look at these animals in a different light.
William McKeever, McKeever, safeguardtheseas.com. The book is Emperors of the Deep. Well done. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you, John, for having me.
It's 1:59.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's a living.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 3 today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day. It's 1 to 3 weekdays, Saturdays.
Love it.
10 to noon on social media, WGN King John. We pretty much blew up Facebook with that news click question. Our daily web poll asked you if we should have those mental health days. Oregon is the only state in the union now that will just say, listen, if your kid doesn't want to go to school today, a la Ferris Bueller or whatever, then don't make them go to school. And you don't have to lie about it. You don't have to get a doctor's note. We'll just call it that. And the kids don't have to go to school. And it sort of eliminates some of the chicanery and shenanigans that take place. So Oregon has a mental health day. We asked you if we should have it too, or what do you think about that? And you were about 55-45 on that one, with more of you saying no, but a lot of you saying yes, and a lot of comments on the page on that. Chris Jones is the theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. He's going to say hi to us after 2:30. So we're going to get casino gambling in Illinois, in Chicago rather. Question is, where do we put that casino? Lori Lightfoot thinks maybe it should go on the south side or the west side. And while I understand how attractive that is, I also see how maybe wrong that is. Chris has some interesting points about all of that. He'll join us after 2:30. So there is the Alex Pegler Memorial Goal and Assist Fund, which you may not have heard about. It's relatively new. I know a little bit about it because the late Alex Pegler, a young man who suddenly died at the age of 24 a year ago, his mom works for us here at WGN Radio. Peggy is a great gal and a really good salesperson. That's beside the point. But I know a little bit about the family via Peg and Alex. And when Alex died, they had a service that was one of the most fantastic, if you will, celebrations you would ever see of a young man's life. And all of the kids from New Trier were there, and the community was there, and the families were there. And it was really a touching and, I think, memorable moment for the family as they celebrated this young man's life. Well, now they have the Alex Pegler Memorial Goal and Assist Fund. And this is a way to raise money for kids that want to play hockey, which is pretty much the most expensive thing a kid can tell a mom or daddy wants to do. It's like, really? Basketball would kill you? Track? Hello? But no, you want to play hockey. Okay, but then that costs money, doesn't it? So they're taking this young man's passion for hockey and they're turning it into a fundraiser for other kids who might similarly sort of catch the fever, the Alex Pegler Memorial Goal and Assist Fund. And they're having a big hoo-ha July 27th. It's going to be skating. It's going to be food. It's going to be beverages. It's going to be auction items. And to tell us a little bit about it is Alex's brother, Jack. Jack, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Last I saw you was at your brother's service. You did magnificently there. I know that was a hard day for you and your family, but you rose to the occasion.
I appreciate that. It was a tough day. I can't thank everyone enough that came out. It was a crazy turnout.
Tell me about your brother, Jack. He was a hockey player.
He was. He was a hockey player from, 2 years old. I had him on the ice skating.
You're Jack. He's Alex. Sorry, tell me about Alex. Your brother, Comet Jack. But I mean, so he was a hockey player.
He was. He was on the ice from age of 2 to, unfortunately, only lost him in October.
Well, he was, after he played at New Trier, and he played on a state championship team, right?
That's right.
He was. And then he went on to coach. He was working with the kids at New Trier afterwards, right?
He was coaching the team this year that won state, yep. Yep.
And so what kind of a player was he? What position did he play?
He played left wing. He played forward. He was a utility player. You could move him around wherever you wanted.
Was he a bruiser? Was he a fast skater?
He was a bruiser. He was fast. He could score goals. He could kind of do it all. I think he coupled some things that he caught from me and some of my friends growing up watching us and kind of tried to put a little compilation of that into his own skill set. So he was quite the player. I think a lot of his teammates would say that he is if you look in the dictionary, you'd see if you looked at his name in the dictionary, you know, his picture would be next to the name team player.
Yeah.
And that's the definition of, you know, what he was. And this foundation, naming it, its namesake going after Alex, this is something that hockey brought a sparkle to his eye, and he wanted everyone to be able to have that opportunity.
Picture I see of him looks like a defensive player. He looks like you do not want to. You do this guy could check. This guy could probably, which you don't get to do so much in high school hockey, right?
Well, no. There you
do. You can hit.
Yeah, you can. You can. He was very physical.
You have more of the Patrick Kane build. You look more sleek and quick and stylish.
That. Well, he was. He had a very similar build, but he was a big body. Big body guy.
Yeah, right.
Stick him in front of the net. No one really wanted to mess with him.
So let's just, before we just get to the event, just tell me a little bit about the sort of coincidence of the two of you. You were 5 years older than him, so you never played against your brother in high school hockey.
So it's actually 3.5 years. So I graduated from Loyola in 2009, and he started, ironically, I lost to New Trier that year in the state title. He started the next year at New Trier.
So you went to Loyola?
Correct.
He was a New Trier guy?
Yes.
That, I don't know a lot about high school hockey, but that's the rivalry for hockey?
That's the rivalry for hockey. Those are the two teams here in the state of Illinois. I'm obviously a Loyola Academy Gold through and through, but Alex went to New Trier, and he loved green with everything that he had inside of him.
So was that a rivalry in the household between the two of you?
Yeah, you could say so. There were some tough times there, but Alex really supported Loyola when I was there. He wanted to actually follow in my footsteps there, and then growing up with his friends in Wilmette, he made the right decision, and I think he went to New Trier, and you know, he made an impact there and won a state championship.
So he wins a state championship last year, the year that he passed. Loyola, your school, played his school in the state championship, right?
This past year, Loyola played, yes, New Trier in the state championship.
I mean, that's apropos, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't write that in a book.
And who won the state championship?
And New Trier won. New Trier won. So it couldn't have turned out as any better for our family in terms of a turnout from the end of the game. You know, we were happy either way. Obviously, my boys lost.
But if you're going to lose to them 1 year, this would be the year to do it. And right. I know that his teammates dedicated the championship to him. They skated for him. Did they do something with the jerseys, or did they have his name or number on there or something?
Yeah. So those guys are awesome. So I couldn't root against that team. I spoke to them a number of times. Supported them the entire season.
Yeah,
I actually spoke to them right after the wake. That was actually really touching to speak with them. And, you know, they told me they were going to play for Alex this season and get it done. And in my eulogy, I actually told them to get it done. So I'm really proud of them, guys, if you're listening.
So that was on. Job. That was you. That was you that got it done too. Huh? Yes. And then they spread his ashes in the at the rink. Is that correct?
They did. They did. They spread some ashes.
I don't think you're supposed to do that. Maybe we shouldn't say that on the radio. We didn't say that on the radio. They did not spread his ashes at the United Center.
The ashes have been spread a lot of places.
So you've got an event now. So that's who we're talking about. This young man and this family, and how can we sort of share, because it was important to your family. It meant a lot to you all. It means a lot to the community and to these people. If somebody else wanted to do it, it's an expensive sport. We're going to do a fundraiser and sort of spread the love. What a good idea. That's the only way to pay it forward. So we have this almost summer block party coming up from 4 to 10 p.m. at the North Shore Ice Arena in Northbrook. At the arena in Northbrook, they're having a big day, Friday the 27th. It starts, as I understand it, with from 4 to 5 p.m., the youth, local kids, skating and skills, working with the older kids.
Right, right.
Then the alumni game, the New Trier Hockey alumni game, which I guess you don't get to play in.
Actually, I was invited to play in it. So that's also
sacrilege. You can't play in that. Well, you're a Loyola guy.
Well, you know what? There's actually a few Loyola guys that were invited to play in it this
good,
year.
Good. I'm glad. Yep. Well, actually, and that's from 5:15 to 6:15.
That's correct.
You may be the only hockey player in the history of the state to have championship rings from two different schools in the same sport, because that's you got true. One when you won for Loyola. When your brother's team won in his name last year, they gave you one of the rings, correct?
That is correct. I actually got a ring a week and a half ago.
Good for you, New Trier. That's the way to do it.
Yes, thank you guys. Really appreciate that.
So, there's going to be an auction item?
Yeah, silent auction. The silent auction starts after the hockey ends. So the green team will be on there with the younger kids up until about 5:15 to 6:15 will be the alumni skate. And from there, it'll just be a lot of fun. Silent auction starts. I'm sure there's a bar set up, food, everything.
Barbecue, stuff like that.
Barbecue, it's just music. Fun in the sun. Exactly. It'll be a good time.
NewTrierHockey.com. NewTrierHockey.com has a lot of the links to ways you can make a donation. You can participate. You can just show up. They'd like to see the whole community out there. It is a community, New Trier Hockey, Loyola Hockey, North Shore Hockey. So you all turn out for this thing now. NewTrierHockey.com is the website for the Alex Pegler Memorial Goal and Assist Fund. His brother will be there along with some of his comrades on both sides of the rink. Good for you. It's nice to see you. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank
today.
You for having me. Thank you for having me.
Next time you'll come in and we'll talk Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and
we
things
will,
like
we
that.
We will. We can. My guys at Chicago Crypto Capital would like that. So.
Yeah. Well, our guys at WGN Radio love working with your mom. And you've done a nice job for your brother here. Good luck on Friday, huh?
Yeah, Saturday.
Did I say Friday? Why did I see Friday, Peg? It's Saturday, right? here I'm sending everybody on the wrong day. Is that right?
It's Saturday,
July. As you may know, the 27th this year is a Saturday. So go Saturday, July 27th from 4 to 10 p.m. All of the details at NewTrierHockey.com. Okay, Jack, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Right, so what time, Kevin, are you paying attention over there to WGN Radio? It's AM 720 on your dial. It's also in your headphones. What time is the White Sox game this evening?
That's a 6:35 pregame right here on WGN and a 7:10 first pitch.
Sox won last night.
They did.
Made it look easy. Here's what you do. You hit the ball, you throw the ball, you catch the ball.
Complete game from Ivan Nova.
That was so nice to see him afterwards. He did not want to get the water doused on his head. And he's standing there, and somebody comes up and does a cup, and he's ticked. He does not like that. And somebody else comes up, and none of these were Yalmer. I didn't see Yalmer do this. He's the king of the water dunk or the Gatorade splash.
Yeah.
Somebody else puts more water on his head. And somebody else gets the bucket. He gets three showers. And then he's just got goobers and stuff all hanging from his face. And then you got to go do the interview.
Yeah.
But he was a great sport about it. And then he and Ricky Renteria had a nice hug.
Mm-hmm.
He walks off the field right past our own Joe Brand, by the way. I said, Joe, hey, you're on TV. Smile.
Yeah.
It was just a nice night for the White Sox, wasn't it?
It was. Complete game from Nova. Just the one and run. No walks, five strikeouts. And Yoel Moncada just continues to have a monster year. He went 2-for-4, four RBIs, hit a home run as well. So a lot of good things for the Sox last night.
Like Abreu's comment about hitting number four.
He yeah. Says,
well, if I was the manager, I'd have him hitting in my spot. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. You know, a lot of Sox fans have kind of been calling for this for a while because Moncada's had been sitting around the 6th or 7th spot most of the season, and I think he's shown this year he can hit from both sides of the plate. So Ricky Renteria doesn't exactly have to play matchups, whether it's a righty or a lefty situation. He's turning into a superstar. He really is. I mean, he's hitting behind Jose Abreu. He's getting more opportunities to drive in runs, and he's doing it.
Well, that's what we thought we got when we got him,
yeah.
And then it didn't happen last year. And now he's starting to come into his own, so that's nice to see.
Yeah, I think a lot of the pressure's off of him. I think last year he felt a ton of pressure because he was a centerpiece of that Chris Sale trade, and all eyes were on him. I think this year, since they've been playing better, you know, Tim Anderson's been playing better, Eloy Jimenez getting the call-up, Dylan Cease, it kind of just takes a little bit of the pressure off Moncada.
None of them should feel pressure this year anyway. Next year? Next year
we'll be hanging on every single game.
Next year we're going to want a little more.
That's right.
By the way, at ChicagoTribune.com, and I didn't see this in print, I've got the online version today, Chicago aldermen may raise the minimum wage to $15, but with the city's cost of living, is that even enough? So the federal minimum wage is $7.25. Those numbers don't mean anything. State and the federal minimum wage doesn't mean anything because most people are getting paid, even hourly employees, more than $7 an hour. I don't know anybody that's making $7.25. But then they tell the stories of people who are living on $12, $13 an hour. The story begins, Julia Simone Downs, 24, received a modest pay raise at her job. She works at one of the jazz and blues clubs in town, and she now gets $13 an hour. So that's, what, $520 a week. And she said, even now I need another job, and it's just hard to make a living, paying off my rent, paying off my phone bill, and paying down some credit card or student loan debt that she has. And I'm thinking there's this resistance to $15 an hour as a minimum wage. It's coming in Illinois, but what they're saying is the city council is saying we should speed it up so that it'll go to $15 an hour in the next, 2 years. The bill raises the statewide minimum wage to $15 by 2025. Chicago wants to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour at a rate faster than that. And I don't see it in front of me now, but I believe it's in the next 1 or 2 years it would be $15 an hour. And I'm wondering, you know what, I don't know, but you can text to 312-981-7200. Text to 312-981-7200. If you or somebody you know, if they're the principal breadwinner, they're making money for themselves, or they have a small family, maybe they got a large family, I'm wondering how bad it is, right? Like, is anybody really supporting a family on $13 an hour or $12 an hour? Because I don't know how you do that. $15 an hour hardly sounds like enough. And I don't think these are McDonald's jobs where we say, well, you shouldn't expect that job to support a family. You should be rising up. Well, I guess we all should. But not all of these jobs that are paying $15 or $12 or $13 an hour are those sorts of, you know, can I take your order jobs. So I'm just wondering what you're getting along on, I guess, is what we're asking, or somebody you know. Tell me about that at 312-981-7200. Stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And Chris Joan talks about casino gambling in the city of Chicago after this. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. .238 WGN. Why are you playing this?
I'm playing this song because this is Earth, Wind, and Fire's Less Groove, and they will be at the Chicago Theater on both this Saturday and Sunday, the 27th and the 28th at 8 p.m.
I just saw that Earth, Wind, and Fire will be the fourth group ever honored at the Kennedy Center. The Kennedy Center honors this winter will include them. They will be joining previously the Eagles, the Who, and Led Zeppelin, I think, were the other three. Earth, Wind & Fire's having a nice little run. They're coming to town.
I think I already told you the story, John, but one of the greatest moments in my life is when Earth, Wind & Fire liked a tweet of mine.
Oh, my God. Really? What did you say that they noticed?
Well, when I was working in Oregon and getting up at 2, 3 a.m. every day, I found that listening to Earth, Wind & Fire helped wake me up, and it was not too overwhelming, so I was mentioning that on Twitter, and they liked that I listened to that at 3 in the morning.
I just remember the Red album with the gold medallion in the middle that had the titles of their songs, their greatest hits album, and that was every track was good on that, Earth, Wind & Fire. How about that? I wonder if Chris Jones is a big Earth, Wind & Fire fan. He's the theater critic for the Tribune. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN.
A very big Earth, Wind & Fire fan.
Reasons may be my favorite song of theirs, but, you know, I could get into an argument with myself over which one.
Everyone's a jam, my opinion.
Yeah. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Really good. What a nice piece you wrote. Without great shows and dining, Chicago's casino could be dealt a losing hand. It's in the Tribune. So you are seen by most of us as the theater critic for the Chicago Tribune, but every now and then you write about entertainment in a larger sense, and this is a nice piece. What's the main takeaway for you? What should we know most, maybe first and foremost, about a casino in Chicago?
Well, I think, you know, I was struck by how the debate over the casino so far has been entirely about location. So there's been all these arguments, should it be on the south side, should it be close to downtown, should it be near Indiana, and sort of strangely to me, none of the debate has really been about what would be in the casino. And I thought, you know, anyone who sort of follows the industry knows that in Las Vegas and other great gambling cities, what's happening is that gaming is becoming less and less the main reason for being. Most of those hotels in Vegas, the big famous ones on the Strip that most people have been to, really make only about a third of their revenue from gambling, or gaming as they prefer to call it, and the rest of it, of course, comes from restaurants and from hotels and from entertainment. And actually, if you look at the statistics, the share of revenue from gaming is going down, not up. So I think the one thing we should be thinking about is then, is this casino just going to be a kind of cinder block bank of depressing slot machines that's going to take our money, or can we actually build something that, you know, Chicago could be proud of, something that might showcase restaurants and shows and artists, and that just might be a nice place to go, some sort of world-class kind of destination.
Almost reverse engineer the thing, put up a great destination and then stick a casino in there.
Exactly my point.
I hope that the legislators and city fathers and mothers read your piece, because some of the statistics are a little jarring to me, and I underlined a couple of them. Like you just said, gambling accounts for 34% of the revenue at a typical Las Vegas casino, and the bite that the city of Chicago is going to take out of the casino revenues is enough to make you wonder if they're going to be able to make it.
Well, the total tax burden, roughly speaking, when you add the state tax and the city tax, is around 75%. So what that means, in casino terms, they always talk about the hold. So, you know, you play craps, John, maybe, or blackjack or a game like that. And, you know, different casinos have different rules, and some of those rules give you a better shot as a gambler than others. And the reality is, if you're giving away three-quarters of the money you're making, which is what they're doing, you need to make more money to pay back your investors. And so what's likely to happen, in my opinion, then, is the games get tighter. And then eventually, people who are smart, and some gamblers are pretty smart, they cease to play, or they'll go play somewhere else. And you can go right across the border into Indiana, and it's not that difficult to, you know, gamble wherever you go. Frankly, you can go and do it in New Buffalo, Michigan. You can do it in Wisconsin. It's everywhere. So this idea that if we just put up this depressing, you know, sort of locale in Chicago, that everyone, that we're going to make a fortune and pay back all the pension debt, I think is, let's say it's not entirely been well thought out yet.
Well, you surmised if 75% of the revenue goes to the state, then, right, you're dealing with 25.
City and state, right.
City
yeah.
and state.
Yeah.
Then here's one of the ways that they'll do, things they'll do is that is they're not going to give away drinks or discount drinks. The food's going to be more expensive.
Right.
Like you said, the games will be tighter, so you're not going to win as often or as much. It's going to be harder to win money, and it won't be at least an easy evening for drinking and eating because they've got to make money in ways other than gambling itself.
Well, I think at the end of the day, the other point that I wanted to make really was that we're all better off if the casino is full of rich people. Now, I don't mean working there. I think in the city of Chicago, it would be ideal if the casino workers really reflected the diversity of the city and that actually went some way towards equity and inclusion in terms of who is working there and indeed who's owning some of the things in there. But when it comes to the customers, you know, the only moral casino income in my mind is from people who can afford to lose it. So if you or I who can afford to lose $100, say, if we can, go out there on a Friday night and we lose that $100 and we have a good time doing it. We hang out together, we have a social evening, we have fun, then I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you're talking someone who can't afford to lose it or someone who loses more than they can afford to lose, then I think the impact of the casino starts to become injurious to the city's health.
You also said that the people don't travel far to go to casinos. They tend to draw from the immediate vicinity.
Right. That's correct. I mean, that's what the data shows you, that they tend to go, you know, people go to the closest one. If you want to go plug a slot machine, you're inclined to go to, you don't want to drive 200 miles to do it. The only, you know, and the danger of that then is that wherever you locate the casino, that's where a lot of your customers will come from.
Sure, but then it's a drain. So here's what we're going to do in the city of Chicago. We're going to put up weed stores so you'll be more easily
right.
able to access recreational marijuana. Like, that's going to help the South and West Side. And
right.
what if they win the lottery and they get to have the casino? It's just going to suck money out of those communities.
Yeah.
So some people will get jobs there, but it's, I'll bet, not a cash positive for the community.
Well, I would argue that you can give people from those communities jobs and still locate the casino somewhere where it will attract rich people. So that then you've got the ideal scenario. Then you've got a kind of a something that could actually redistribute some of the wealth, deal with some of the inequalities that we deal with in this city, and at the same time, you know, also create an attractive destination. That,
yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with going to one of those places for a good time. Nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But it's got to be the right kind of place. And I think just sort of discussing a location really, you know, in many ways, you can't really figure out a location until you've figured out what you want to build. And this is a sort of a great opportunity in some minds. But on the other hand, it's really time to sort of say, these are what the parameters should be in this kind of thing, because it's never happened here before. And it's, you know, this will be slap bang in the middle of the third biggest city in the United States. And what are we going to do about that? How are we going to make it really good?
But if you put it on the North Shore, if you put it where the rich people are, can you imagine the hue and cry? Can you imagine the hell Lori Lightfoot would have to put up with if this quote-unquote cash cow were given to the rich neighborhoods? People would say, they've already got all of the money. Why are we letting them have a casino? We should put it someplace else for economic development.
I think you've got to work out a deal that says the location and the economic developments are not the same thing. You know, that you've got to say we're all going to agree that the location needs to be here, but that some of the benefits need to flow here. And that way you avoid some of the, you know, the issues that I've been talking about.
Says you. You know, the write that down, send it to the mayor, it'll go fine. But the other thing is, I'm thinking about Wrigley Field, because I live near there, and I'm always getting, depending on the game and my travel schedule, a lot of times I'm getting off the L as the workers are getting on the L to go back to the South Side or the West Side, wherever they live, not in Wrigleyville. And you see a lot of young black kids who have a nice summer job, and they don't live in that neighborhood, but they're working at Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field is in a more affluent area than probably these kids come from, but they enjoy the benefit of working at the ballpark and making some money. I just wonder if what I just described is kind of what you have in mind for the
casino. That is precisely what I have in mind. And, you know, that's precisely what I have in mind. And I think also, you know, you can extend that to saying, okay, well, a casino could also contain, we could take some restaurants, we could take some clubs, we could kind of create some ownership within the casino for, you know, folks from these neighborhoods. I think that's another way. You know, it's not like quite at Wrigley Field, where the Ricketts own everything, a casino offers the opportunity to have multiple people involved, give multiple people a piece of the pie. It's a really great chance in many ways, but it's, you know, it's not as simple as it seems. And I think people just think sometimes wrongly that you say, oh, we'll build a casino and it will make a ton of money. The data doesn't really show that. It says, you know, it sometimes makes a ton of money, and sometimes you end up with Atlantic City, and it's not, you know, everything that's promised.
What would you think about putting it at Navy Pier?
Well, I think somewhere like that is the right place. I don't know whether I would say precisely Navy Pier, but somewhere where tourists are going to find it. It clearly, it's advantageous for Chicago for most of its customers not to be residents of the city. You know, that's the stark reality of it. That's what benefits the citizens the most. And I think if it's nice and it's done right, it can also be an asset for visitors.
What happened, Chris Jones, theater critic for the Tribune, his entertainment piece is about where, and not just where you would put a casino, that's sort of the wrong question. He says, what do you put in it? What's the lesson from Boston?
Well, the lesson from Boston really is that you can't overexpand, that gaming these days, gambling, is a bit of a zero-sum game because not everybody wants to do it, frankly. And so the people that do, if you open a new casino, someone who is right now going to Indiana might well decide to go to the closer one in Chicago, but you're not necessarily creating new customers. And frankly, you don't really want to in terms of the social ills of, you know, of gambling for many people. What you know, it has to be a kind of add-on in my mind to, you know, a whole variety of entertainment options. That's the only way, for me, that it's a moral addition to the city of Chicago.
Yeah, there you go, using that word moral again. Yeah. But the way you write about it in the Trib, Chris, it sounds like you know your way around the tables. Do you?
I've been known. You know, I was writing about, as I mentioned in the piece, that I've been known to play a hand of blackjack, and the blackjack games that you probably think of, most people think of as getting, if you get a blackjack at blackjack, right, you get paid off a bonus. You get paid, if you have $10 up there, you get paid $15 back. So you get a blackjack, you get a 3-2 bonus. Well, if you go to Vegas now and you don't have much money, which is me, then you'll find now that bonus is probably 6-5, not 3-2. So those guys have cut, you know, the bonus in half because they're trying to make more money and, you know, create more of a house edge. So you reach a point sometimes when you might enjoy a little entertaining gambling, but you realize you're not going to win and you lose quickly enough that you just don't want to do it anymore. And I think that's the thing, is that don't assume, City of Chicago, there's all these suckers out there ready just to drop their money on lousy games. I mean, it's not the truth. And I think that, you know, everything has to be done right here.
Well, if gaming brings you joy, if going to the casinos... No, seriously, hear me out. If gambling brings a person happiness, then they can afford it. Far be it for me to...
Right on.
To judge it, but I never go to casinos, but I was in one this weekend in Peoria, and I thought it was depressing. I felt bad for the workers. I felt bad for the people there. Nobody seemed to be having fun. It just looked like a brain drain.
Exactly. I mean, do we want that in Chicago?
Well, answer that last question for yourself, Chris Jones.
Well, I say no. You know, I how does that, you know, the greatest city in America, how does that make us happier as a city? How does that solve our problems? I mean, it doesn't. It just gives us a depressing new thing
that we're all going to talk about. But if we are going to do it, and we are, then at least do it right. Don't think revenue from gaming is going to do it. You'd better engineer this thing properly, or you're going to have a cinder block thing. How did you describe it? Some sort of
some sort of bunker. Exactly. You know, what I had in my head was exactly what you encountered in Peoria. You know, those places are depressing. We all know that. We have to do something better than that. Something different from that.
Nice to read you, my friend, and always a pleasure to talk to you too, Chris Jones, the theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. The only moral casino income. The only moral casino income there for the city of Chicago is discretionary income. How could we otherwise look at ourselves in the mirror? Well put, Chris. Sorry I bobbled your words, but they're well written in the Chicago Tribune. I know. I got to read that. John, casino should be located for the tourists, says this texter. Chris agrees. Maybe the news click should be, should the city and state raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour? Should it go up to $15 an hour? We'll post that at WGNradio.com on the John Williams page after the show. We're getting ready for the next one. That's Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, and friends, plus the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.